This is Geek Speak, episode 10 of our 16th season. You are listening to Independent Public Radio 88.9 KUSP, Santa Cruz, and streaming live worldwide at KUSP.org. It's time now for Geek Speak.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP or any of the geeks' affiliated organizations. I'm Bonnie Jean Primch here with Lyle Troxell. We're bringing you the show today. And just a quick mention that we are in our spring membership campaign here at KUSP. You've got a chance to get yourself into a Fitbit Blaze. We're doing a drawing for that ends at noon. So anyone who donates before noon gets entered into that drawing. And of course, there's other real sort of philosophical reasons to give to the station as well. We'll talk about that later. For now, there's lots and lots of tech news to get to, so we're going to get right to it. Lyle Troxell, how do you do?
Hey, Bonnie, how's it going?
We're having kind of a moment here because I'm, you know, I fill a different role now at KUSP than when I was
a
regular host for KUSP. I'm now the interim general manager.
It's amazing. So for quite a while, you've been doing Geek Speak with me, but we've been doing off-site. We've been recording the show somewhere else.
Right.
And so I haven't been in the studio running the board live in a long time. And we're live, which
Welcome
is
back.
Great. Thank you so much.
Welcome back.
So I walk in today and I'm like, well, this is kind of Bonnie's space. She's been here. You've been here since March 1st, kind of running the show and getting KUSP up back on its feet in some ways.
Yep.
So I guess we'll chat about that some more a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a little later.
I'm really curious how things are going. So I'm looking forward to actually interviewing you a bit on Geek Speak about the role of running KUSP.
All right.
I know it's a little navel-gazing, but we'll try to keep it interesting.
Well, it's relevant to our listeners' interests because it's
their
station.
Absolutely.
It's our listener station. All right. So I'm curious about something. I've got this fancy phone, this iPhone now. And it does this thing every. I plug it in every night. Sometimes I forget. Sometimes the battery kind of gets down into that 17% level. It's kind of kind of a warmer tone to the battery icon. And it doesn't seem like it's so good. Sometimes it fades out and fades back in. The signal isn't as strong. What's going on there?
Well, so the operating system, Apple and iOS 9 kind of released this thing where it's trying to conserve your battery even more, and it turns on special battery conserving features when you get really low in your battery usage. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it'll actually give you a notification saying, we're putting you in conservative mode or something of that nature. And you can turn that off on and off manually under the battery under settings. But the thing that brings to my mind is if you're seeing that a lot, you're kind of doing something wrong. And that's because it used to be the general practice is you want to take your batteries and you want to use them, drain them all the way down, and then fill them all the way up. And that was like the standard mantra. I remember talking about it on Geek Speak. You got to, you know, train your battery. If you have it go down partial away and go up and go down and go, you start producing a new ceiling and you just don't get as much battery performance.
Oh, is that what's going on?
But that's what it used to be like. That's not what it's like anymore.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Forget that.
So
I will
the
no
new
longer
thing.
Be curious about
Here's the
those
new thing
old
you
ways.
Want to do with your phone,
All right,
a lithium
what's
ion
happening?
Battery that's managed by a processor.
Okay.
You actually want to always keep it charged as much as possible. Just top it up all the time. So when you're in your car, plug it in. Even if the battery is at, you know, 90%, go ahead and plug it in.
Really?
The more you keep juice in the phone, the better, in general, the battery will last. And since these, like, Apple phones don't even have removable batteries, in fact, most people don't have removable batteries anymore,
right.
It's really important because once the battery dies, you're kind of in a bad
phone's
space.
Yeah. It's the whole phone.
I mean, you can get a case that has a battery in it, but then you're talking about a bulkier phone. So keep your phone topped up. Now, at the same time, people, the pedants out there that understand this really well, like myself, if I was listening, would be like, yeah, but what about?
Yeah.
There is this point where if you don't actually teach the battery every once in a while what its full charge is, the percentage value that it understands will be wrong. It'll shift over time.
Oh.
So once a month, if you care enough, let it drain all the way.
What?
Yeah, you let it go down
but
really
far. You were
far.
Just saying I need to,
what
I
I'm
need
saying
to
is,
keep it
yeah,
up.
Most of the times, keep it up. Keep it as high up as possible. But every once in a while, once a month or so, let it go all the way down. Now, the thing is, if you just live your life normally, every once in a while, your battery will fall out of juice, right?
I know, I feel like I'm accidentally doing this just right, but why does that work?
Okay, so there's a processor that's actually keeping track. The percentage of the battery is not what's in the battery. It's from when it was filled, what's left in the battery. It knows how much it's used. It records how much it used.
Okay.
But that is not a perfect, and then also how much it's put back in the battery. So it's kind of like looking at a meter in the front, but doesn't actually know what's being stored in the battery. So if you go back and forth at 90%, back and forth 100%, 90%, 100%, over and over, you'll have small amounts of lack of knowledge. It'll be off a little bit. And over time, it'll think, oh, I'm at 90% when really you're at 85%. So it's really about the value.
It needs to understand how much juice is possible to have so it can accurately report how much you have left.
Right. So that is not about a battery performance issue. It's about a battery information or so. So every once in a while, the battery should be discharged all the way. Don't do it very often. And I would just say, just live your life normally with the idea that you want to charge as much as possible. When you get home, take it out of your pocket, put it somewhere down and charge it. That way you won't be tempted to look at your feed when you actually should be watering your plants.
Right. Right? Which I probably should be anyway.
Except for in this weather. I guess you have indoor plants.
The indoor plants suffer.
Definitely.
Yeah. Huh. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So keep it up most of the time. Plug it in like crazy. Mm-hmm. But then every once in a while, like once a month, is that too often or often enough or risking
I think you
something?
Can go. I kind of feel like I never intentionally drain it all the way.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll go to the city for a day and it will be dead by the end of the day because I've used it a lot.
Okay.
Right. I'm videotaping and stuff. So in our normal use, you'll probably have a situation where it drains all the way. So you don't have to plan for it. But if it's been a long time of you never, of it never running out, then go ahead and don't charge it overnight and just
and like all the way to zero, not even like, 17%, that's scary enough for me, but you just got to let it, it's like,
well,
keep breathing. Keep
you don't have to go all
die.
The way down to zero. You have to go down so it has a understanding of how full it is. Mm-hmm. The problem is that it will be wrong. That 10% at the bottom will be wrong. Yeah, so I guess let it run out.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. All right. I'm talking to you, though, if something happens to my phone.
Of course you will. That's great.
Jeez.
Just come on the show and ask. Yeah.
Hey, one of the organizations that Geek Speak has had a lot of respect for over the years is the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Oh, they're great.
EFF.
Yeah.
And why? They seem they're congruent with kind of Geek Speak principles.
Right on.
We're
exactly.
kind of pro open source around here. Information should be available to everyone. We should all be able to participate at an equal level.
Yeah.
And they're getting into the encryption game.
Yeah, they have.
What's going on there?
The general, as we know with Snowden, we have a lot of with the Snowden leaks, we find that the government actually taps internet traffic. Mm-hmm. They put in wiretaps in fiber optics. And that works because a lot of the traffic that's passed around the network is not by default encrypted. When you go to your bank, you use a protocol called SSL or Secure Sockets Layer, or another name is TLS. Doesn't matter. It's a little lock symbol in your browser.
Yeah, the lock
HTTPS.
Symbol.
HTTPS.
Yeah.
So last year, EFF started talking about a proposal to make it extremely easy and free to have one of those certificates. Yeah. Now, traditionally, a certificate like that means you have a domain name like geekspeak.org, and I go talk to a company and say, hey, I'd like to get a certificate. And that process normally is charged about $150. Uh-huh. So for an organization like Geekspeak, which is volunteer completely, it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to have an annual $150 charge. So we never ran SSL.
Right.
And then what that means is that the traffic for GeekSpeak is in the public space. Now, it's all open source information. It's Creative Commons. Doesn't really matter. But when it comes down to our general usage of the internet, the more privacy we can incur, the safer we'll be. Because it turns out that there are vulnerabilities on our machines with a non-private site. Things can be added to the site, which would actually infect your machine, potentially.
Yeah, I've been hearing about this where, evildoers from afar will take over a page of like the small nonprofit museum's volunteer run website.
Absolutely, right.
And then they can use that to sell knockoff products, and the volunteers at the organization don't have enough resources to to correct the problem.
And one of the ways they can do that is because that site was not using a secure certificate because it was expensive, right?
Okay, yeah.
So EFF says, you know what, let's fix this with technology. And they basically started this project called Let's Encrypt, which is said, okay, you set up your web server and you have the server itself that hosts the domain name geekspeak.org or ksp.org. Mm-hmm. You run that and then have this little piece of code that runs on your server. It will contact the EFF Let's Encrypt protocol system and say, hey, I exist. Prove that by putting something on the web page. And then the system would automatically give a free certificate to the website. And then the website becomes HTTPS, a secure website. So that's been – we talked about it a few times on the GeekSpeak program. They launched it a couple months ago. They've now served over 1 million websites – with free certificates.
Really?
Yeah. And a big reason it's been so successful is that these large companies that hosts lots of websites, the one I use is called DreamHost. You can buy a service from them. Uh-huh. They just add it as a feature. So I went up to the site, the DreamHost site, went into my account and mm-hmm. clicked a couple buttons for like lyle.troxel.com, which is my personal website.
Right.
And within a half an hour, it was a secure website.
Oh, so and it was like just a button click. Website builders and things
yes.
like that. So
yes.
hubs where a lot of people go to make their internet presence.
Right. And okay. I mean, I haven't done the Geek Speak with Let's Encrypt. I'm a little more geeky, so I was actually able to get one of the certs manually. But my next step will be switching that to the Let's Encrypt because it actually continually renews, which is a really good feature.
That's nice.
Because the other benefit,
so,
yeah.
So the main benefit then is the technology was already out there, but EFF is making it free and easy to get to.
Yeah, it's simplifying, streamlining the entire process and making it free. So the other aspect of this is that they've been so successful.
Yeah.
They're removing they're offering their own version of it, and then they're opening up the protocol so other people can produce it as well, which means they're making an ecosystem of this free service that produces certificates, which is awesome. So
they really want the talk
for EFF.
Over there.
They do. They do.
Jeez. What else are they up to?
Well, the EFF is actually also recommending, this is one of the things we listen to them the most about, mm-hmm. and that is that they've got a whole bunch of lawyers and they're paying attention to the digital space. That's what it is, right? It's a law firm, if you will, to protect digital rights.
Huh.
Okay.
Right.
And so they're recommending a bill that's actually in the Senate right now, and the bill is called the Fair Access to Science and Technology Research Act, or FASTER, without the E.
Okay.
And what it basically does, the simplicity of it, it's pretty easy. The idea is if we allocate federal funds for scientific research and mm-hmm. technology research, mm-hmm. at the end of that research process, when we have the final answer, that answer should be available to the public. That paid for it.
Oh, that paid for it. That just makes sense.
Right.
What do we get?
Exactly. Now, you don't, I mean, doing this blatantly is challenging because let's say it's a psychological study. You don't, of course, want to share people's names, right? There's things involved in there that are discipline specific.
You have to anonymize private information still.
But the general idea is if you're going to, with this act being passed, if it passes, the general idea is if you ask for federal funds for research, mm-hmm. part of the rule would be that when your research is done, within 12 months, you have to have that available to the public.
Wow.
And so you just put that in your grant for when you request the money. This is how we will actually do this. And it's as simple as that. Huh. And the bill is called FASTER, and it's currently in the Senate. And let your congressman know. And if you want to learn how to do that, you can go to geekspeak.org. There's a link from today's page.
If I was a bureaucrat seeing that this might be coming down the pike and I was responsible for making that publicly funded research available in 12 months – I would think something like, but it takes time to anonymize and it takes time to dress it up for public consumption.
Sure,
and
sure.
I'm not going to have time. What about all the other work I have to do?
The thing is they're saying it's available to the public 12 months after the publication, meaning you've already published in a journal.
Okay.
Right? And so this the idea behind this is that sometimes you'll publish to a journal, but the journal is not actually an open document. You have to subscribe to the service to get the journal.
Oh, I see.
Because it's a discipline-specific.
Okay, yeah, you get an abstract maybe.
So this is basically saying you get some period of time where you can do that in that public journal and get your name recognition. But after that, public, which is cool.
I really support it.
So.
Well, guys, you're listening to Geek Speak on Independent Public Radio, KUSP. I'm Bonnie Jean Primsch, fulfilling a classic role for me here on Geek Speak as co-host. I also happen to be the station's interim general manager these days. And I'm here with Lyle Troxel, also a longtime participant in KUSP here and host of Geek Speak. And in a moment or two, we're going to be talking about ransomware's arrival in the Apple universe. Uh-oh. And how that's working. But first, we want to talk to you about our KUSPiosity.
Yeah.
And
let me start on here. Let me start that out by a couple mentions we've got. We got a lot of feedback on where's Bonnie? Why isn't she on GeekSpeak?
Oh, really?
Yes, because people miss your humor and wonderfulness.
Sorry, guys. I had fish to fry.
But recently we also got a new listener to the program, James H., sent us an email, said, just found your podcast and I can't wait to binge listen. Been looking for a good tech podcast for a while. Thanks for making great content.
Oh, that's nice.
Which, of course, makes me blush and I love all that.
Oh, thanks, James.
So we get feedback. That's the kind of feedback I get.
Right.
And because we've been recording the show remotely and I kind of send in the files to the great staff here at KUSP that gets them up and gets the show going.
Seamless.
And I listen to the station.
Seamless.
I haven't been in the station for quite a while, actually. So I want to know what's happening at KUSP, Bonnie?
Well, more immediately, and I as a responsible interim general manager, I need to let you know that we're in a spring membership campaign and we're trying to raise money for this station. It's a public station. We're getting a lot of new listeners contributing and participating with us, so they might not know the model.
Mm-hmm.
It's a public station, so rather than have commercials, we have a large part of our funding come from listeners who say, I like it, I want to help pay for it.
Someone like James.
Mm-hmm. And you know, people who've been interacting with the internet for a long time are familiar with this model. I like the podcast, I help pay for the podcast. Guys, that model came from public radio.
It certainly did.
And so we're engaged with that right now. We're encouraging people to make their contributions of support at 888-777-1507. That's our phone number. And if you're listening live right now, call that number. If you're listening to our podcast, your contribution, whenever you hear this, is very relevant for KUSP.
Absolutely.
And you can go to KUSP.org and click on the donate button to make your contribution that way. Those contributions are what are making this station go. And we've heard from a lot of people so far this morning, including Anneli in Monterey and Brooke in Aptos and Lynn in Pacific Grove and some other Bonnie. Apparently there's another Bonnie who lives in Carmel. Happy to have you with us. All the Bonnies. We want all the Bonnies. Elizabeth joined us for the first time in SoCal. We love those new members. Robert and Ben Lomond is with us. We had somebody from Pacific Grove and Greta in Santa Cruz. Lots and lots of people contributing this morning with a lot of gratitude for the kind of information for how they can have their curiosity satisfied.
And right, you know, you can be thanked as well. In fact, right now we're offering kind of an incentive for you to act.
Yeah.
And that is that we are doing a drawing for a Fitbit Blaze, mm-hmm. which all the donations automatically are entered as long as you donate before noon today. And let me tell you, I just recently got on a exercise track.
Oh, yeah.
And I got to say, doing it regularly and getting some technology to support the feedback system helps that little rodent brain in our
yeah.
go, ooh, geez,
like
that little bit really helps. And that yeah. kind of feedback, it's a boon time for support, having technology support you in getting exercise. So you sign up now. And of course, monthly contributions definitely help. The phone number.
They do talk about feedback,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
If we're hearing from people every month, just a little something, then we think, okay, we're
keep
doing
it going.
This right. KUSP, we need that feedback.
It's 888-777-1507. Again, 888-777-1507. Of course, if you listen to Geek Speak, you know that you can visit www.kusp.org. Bonnie, why do you serve? What inspired you to decide to?
I tell you what, it's been an interesting time at KUSP. We had the news and information going for years.
Absolutely, years and years.
And really, really believed that was the way to fund the whole works. And as it turns out, there's another news and information station publicly supported, and they're doing a great job,
mm-hmm.
right? Also in the listening area. So it became less of a public service to do that. So as the station was figuring out what to do about that and what to switch to, a lot of us associated with the KUSP universe were going, gosh, I don't know. How's this going to work?
Yeah.
And so I was watching from my corner of the universe.
And you and I chatted a lot about this.
And we talked a lot about it. Yeah. As you know, we've had a long association with this station and really felt all the different ways,
absolutely.
Every single way that you could feel about it. And then I started noticing something, Lyle, and I think you're noticing it too, that people who have been with KUSP for a long time are stepping up behind the scenes and doing more than we have in a long time to really make the place go. And then I heard the sound. We switched to the music,
mm-hmm.
and I heard it like developing and transforming live on the air. You know, you could watch this place really kind of build the thing that we're building. And I went, I want to be part of that.
And, you know, this is a big change, and we're recognizing that completely.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, in technology, this idea of early adopters. You know, it's the first person to ever get blah, And they're normally the people that are kind of hyper-engaged in the idea of it
mm-hmm.
and want to see the bumps and bruises and kind of see it as it goes. And the cool thing about this is that's all the staff and volunteers that are doing this. And as a listener...
And the listeners.
Yeah. You can participate in that early adopter stage by saying, yes, we're like that you're still here.
Mm-hmm.
We like that you're producing music
mm-hmm.
and some talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, we want that a part of our lives, and here's some money. That early adoption really helps us right now because it is a new delicate child in a lot of ways,
though
we've been here for 43 years.
It's so interesting. Yeah, in a way, we're kind of being reborn.
Absolutely.
And we understand not everybody is an early adopter, but because you're listening and because you're enthusiastic about what you're hearing on KUSP, please contact us. It's listener support or bust around here right now. So,
and it's easy to do this.
Yeah.
It's 888-777-1507. You know, I urge you to just pick up right now, 888-777-1507. And of course, you can go on geekkosp.org. And if you do that right now, you'll get thrown into a drawing for a Fitbit Blaze that will help you exercise. And, of course, your donations right now are doubled by the board of KOSP, which we really appreciate.
So earlier I said that we were going to be talking about ransomware, and it's showing up on OS X.
Yes, okay. The ransomware in general is a term that's used for a computer virus that gets on your computer. And we've seen this in a Windows environment, and it's actually, we've covered it a few times on GeekSpeak. The general idea, normally traditionally a virus would be like, get on your computer, and it's a piece of application that would run, and it would do things like annoy you. And then there was one for a while that would erase all your files. Not cool.
Not cool.
And then there are ones that would send spam from your machine. So basically your machine would become this spam bot. That's why we had a lot of spam for quite a while.
Right, I remember that.
But in general, it was using your computer for nefarious reasons, but wasn't actually taking anything directly from you unless it was deleting something. So the general idea of this new software, the ransomware software, is instead of deleting your files, what it does is it encrypts all your files. So you understand the encryption idea,
yeah,
that you sign something with a giant number,
right,
and without the other number, you cannot get it back. So it slowly walks through your computer system, finds every file on your entire computer system,
uh-huh,
and it encrypts it, changes it to be an encrypted thing, which means you cannot see the contents of it.
Mm.
Not good.
Not good.
After it does that, after it completes that completely, it then sends you a little note and says, guess what? You can't get to your files anymore unless you pay us some money.
Okay. I've heard about this, and police departments have fallen prey to
That's right, yes.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about what that looks like in the Apple universe now.
So ransomware.
Yeah.
Okay, do you understand it? Any questions about it?
No, I think I get it. Basically, they encrypt things from you. It still stays on your computer, and they say, oh, dear, things happen, don't they? It'd be a shame if you couldn't get back at your data.
That's right.
And then they ask you to cough up money, and when you realize there's no other way but to give them money, even if you're a police department, feel completely sheepish doing so, you do it, and they go, oh, look, here's all your files. No problem. Bye.
And as we covered the story of last year, us Mac users got to go, Ben didn't have on Macintosh.
Yeah.
Very snotty thing as Apple users seem to be.
No one is safe. Congratulations,
now,
everybody.
One in the wild. And this ransomware hit the wild a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it was found actually in a piece of software that was on a website. And that software is an application. So it didn't spread onto the Mac very easily. You had to get that application, install it on your Mac, and put in your password to get it in. And inside that trusted...
Why would anyone do that?
Well, because in that application did something completely different. That application actually allowed you to download stuff. It's a BitTorrent client. We won't get into that. But so it was an application that's really well known. And within, I think, a day, 3,000 people downloaded this thing.
Oh, not
knowing that inside the application was a secondary application, this ransomware.
No.
And the ransomware was very clever. It didn't run right away. It waited 3 days after you installed it, and then 3 days later, it would encrypt all your data and then prompt. That
Sneaky
way,
Pete.
It'd be harder.
Where'd it come from? Why?
Right.
How's this happening?
Very smart.
Wow.
So it's a very close copy of one that's been in the wild from Linux, but it is in the wild for Windows, for Macintosh, and we will see more of this. The other thing that's really interesting about this is that the application, to get an application to run on a Macintosh, you have to get it signed. You have to get an authority from Apple. And so every OS X or any developer that works for Apple, that makes software for Apple, gets a certificate they sign their software with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an iOS developer, so every time I want to deploy an application, got to get it signed by Apple.
Mm-hmm.
So Apple says, we trust you, and then I put stuff out there, and then maybe you trust me. So someone trusted actually signed this application.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which was kind of cool because as soon as it was discovered, prior to anyone getting encrypted, by the way, Apple revoked it and said, hey, all computers out there that run this operating system, don't trust this application anymore. And it stopped working.
Okay, so that's part
of, system
worked. You know, Apple controls their whole universe, and so then they were able to pull off that kind of a reroute.
That's right.
Even after they've made a big mistake.
Yeah, and the thing about this idea of Apple kind of controlling what can be put on the computer, Windows has been doing this too.
Mm-hmm.
The general idea is the operating system manufacturer, Apple, puts out the hardware, puts out the operating system. Then when you want to use software, any software you want to run, they have to bless.
Yeah.
And that's kind of not cool. Like,
double-edged,
we don't like
sword.
That,
yeah.
Right?
We don't like, because that's counter to the whole open source, everybody gets access thing.
Right. If I want to make some funny app about, you know, cats jumping up and down, whatever it is, I don't want to have to get Apple involved if I just want to give it to you and me, right?
Yeah.
So we, as geeks, we've kind of been like, oh, this isn't great. But then we see something like this, where,
it's,
you know, 3,000 people got all their data saved because Apple was able to revoke the certificate.
Hmm.
So there's a definite benefit on that kind of protection.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part of it that it's always kind of, I mean, of course, it's very nuanced how this works. and it's complicated how the benefits and drawbacks are. It's kind of the role I feel like GeekSpeak does.
Right.
Is kind of explain this
to you. Explaining all that, yeah.
Now, Apple has done this thing where if you're really a serious geek and you want to install something that was not trusted, you can turn off all these settings. It's hard to do, but you can do it. So I do that sometimes for my computer when I want to install something. I'll turn off all these protections. Mm-hmm. And with the general idea, and I think this is really good, the general idea is Apple says, hey, everybody that doesn't want to worry about it, we'll protect you, right? We'll make sure things are signed. We'll check them. We'll revoke them if they're dangerous. Mm-hmm. You just go about your merry way and don't think about it.
Yeah.
And then the people that are doing their serious geekery that want to have this extra ability can ignore that and do it themselves. So, and there's actually three tiers of that in the Apple.
Is that a thing that's happening?
Yeah, actually it is.
Okay.
Apple offers the App Store for the application store, the Mac App Store, which is for Macintosh applications.
Gotcha.
So if you put them there, they're very protected. You have to submit them. They review them.
Okay.
And that's one setting. In fact, if you want to install something not in the Apple Store, Macintosh Store, you have to turn off a setting. That's one of the settings they protect you with.
Okay.
And then that allows me to send you an application. But that application still has to be signed by Apple.
Right.
So the general there is Adobe does this, for example. Photoshop, right? Really big application.
Yeah, big.
They don't put it on the App Store. Apple doesn't get a cut of it.
Oh.
They make the application. They sign it with their certificates, which they hopefully keep trusted and protected and safe.
When
you download it, it's an Apple operating system knows it's safe. And then that's the setting I prefer. I recommend that you keep it at that level. And that's relatively easy to implement and use. Mm-hmm. And then there's a secondary level where you turn off all this stuff. And that's, I don't think anyone should do that at this point. It's too dangerous.
It
really is, yeah.
Okay. But it's available for people who do active inner tinkerings.
Yeah, there are some command line tools that doesn't make any sense to sign like that.
Okay.
And of course, they're normally open source. You can kind of compile them yourself, so you know it's relatively safe.
Right.
But I'm not going to ask you to compile applications to run your computer, Bonnie. That's
well,
not fair.
That's one sort of level of thinking and having to pay attention, and allows for kind of meaty human thinking where there's some nefarious people out there. Then you got your artificial intelligence.
Ah, updates on artificial intelligence,
which is just like pure thought. That's all it is.
It is, isn't it?
Right.
It used to be that we really focused on artificial intelligence, this idea that someday computers would just be just like a human being. They'd be, they'd have emotions, they'd have intellect that you could debate and talk to. And then, of course, the fear out there is that then they would supersede us and they'd kill us.
Yeah, anything that Boston Dynamics has to show us.
My God, did you see the walking robot?
The walking one. Okay, so there's a walking robot. We're going to have to link to this if you haven't already.
Yeah,
have you done it?
No, I don't think we've
Okay, we got to do it. So a walking robot, and he's like stumbling around in snow, totally fine.
Bipedal, humanoid.
Bipedal.
With just like almost no head. A little creepy.
Yeah, a little creepy. And so then here's what they do. Is you're going, oh, no, he's going to take over the universe. And then a human being, like, knocks him down, like, pushes him again and again and again with a broomstick or something.
Or a hockey
stick. Or something.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, that poor robot.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
Oh, psyops. They're trying to get us to sympathize with the robot.
Well, let me ask you something. That robot that's just walking, and then he the robot at one point picks up a box, a cardboard box, which is 10 pounds.
Right.
And then the human has a stick and just knocks it out of their hands.
Yeah.
And it falls to the ground.
Yeah.
And then the robot has to pick it up again, and it happens again. Did you empathize for the robot?
I did. That's what I'm saying.
But
they're
why?
They're being very clever.
Why did you empathize
with
the robot?
He's just trying to stand up, and this guy keeps pushing him down.
I think it's fascinating.
He's being a bully.
Have you ever hated, like, a microwave or a washing machine?
No, I've never felt that way about the objects.
Right, but you even, I mean,
Internet
I've kicked a washing machine,
not
right?
Win like, me over like that.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's the thing that's amazing to me is that because a washing machine, which has a lot of complexity, looks like a box, if somebody's hitting it, you're like, oh, that poor person's having a temper tantrum. You don't think anything about the machine. But in this situation, the guy is testing the machine's capabilities.
Yeah,
I couldn't turn off my empathy to that robot, even though it's just like a washing machine. There's nothing different about it, right?
Yeah.
But my brain just is like, that's a thing.
Poor robot.
That's a person.
Let it walk.
It's great. I think this idea of investigating how we emotionally empathize with machines is fascinating.
And interact with them. Like somebody was saying that their kid says thank you when Siri gives them some information. They go, thank you.
Oh, that's great.
No, we don't do that, but
So Google's DeepMind, which is an artificial intelligence system that Google's produced, just beat the South Korean champion Lee Sol-dol on Go. Now, Go, of course, is an ancient Chinese game that's actually popular all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Go, even though it looks simple, is much more complicated than chess. And chess was a boundary that that Deep Blue from IBM beat a while ago.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Meaning that a human being cannot beat a computer in that system directly.
Okay.
Go, the Go championship for, I think he's actually the European championship for Go. He's not the world champion, but he's a European champion.
Okay.
That's
a person champion.
Yeah, Lee Sol-dol. He battled AlphaGo, which is the program that runs on DeepMind's AI system.
Okay.
And they were going to play five games, and the best three out of five would be the winner.
Okay.
They got through three, and the computer won every single time.
Oh.
So the first time that he lost, he said, "I've heard that Google DeepMind's AI is surprisingly strong and getting stronger, but I am confident to win at least this time." That was the first time he played him.
Okay.
He lost.
He lost.
But he also said, "But if artificial intelligence continues to advance in 2 or 3 years, then it will beat me." So he's not like being arrogant. He's just saying, "I think that I can beat him."
Yeah.
So speaking after the first game where he lost, Lee lost, uh-huh. he wasn't shaken at all. He just said, "Very surprised. I didn't expect to lose. I didn't think AlphaGo would play the game in such a perfect manner."
Oh, that's right. Oh, didn't he wind up sort of complimenting his moves as beautiful?
He
like,
did.
No human would make that move. It was purely generated by the computer. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and so the next day, right before the second game, he says, "Yesterday I was surprised, but today it's more than that. I was quite speechless." He lost the second time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he says, "I have to say, if you look at how the game was played, I admit that it was very clear. It was a very clear loss on my part. From the very beginning of the game, there was not a moment in time where I felt that I was leading." So it didn't just beat him. It made him feel like
lost.
It was better.
He was
lost. You know, if you if you do something with me, you and I challenge each other,
uh-huh.
you're going to win sometimes, I'm going to win sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going to matter that much, right?
Yeah,
but
when my man and I play Ingenious on the
uh-huh.
computer, it's like that.
Back and
we
forth,
take
right?
turns whooping each other.
But if you ever play someone who's so much better than you, you go, "Oh, I'm not as good at this game." Like,
yeah.
that's a different feeling.
Yeah, that's,
and
me
that's
trying
what this robot
beat
did.
Scrabble, beat Howard Feldstein at Scrabble. I can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't do
and
it.
That, so that's the aspect of the robot that's walking around. You push him over, we still have emotion for it. This deep blue machine thing that could beat a person and go, "I have emotion for the player."
Yeah,
right? That's
right.
kind of sad.
Aw, poor
he
player.
Still made like $50,000 for actually playing
so
the game.
Doing
so
all
he's
right.
doing fine.
That
and
guy
it was
can
interesting
eat.
And all that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. cool. Well, thanks for the update on what's going on in AI. I'm sure we'll be fine as mere meat humans going forward. There's no problem there. In a moment here on Geek Speak, we're going to be talking about what might happen to Florida if the GMO mosquitoes that are potentially going to be released there are released there. I'm curious to hear about that.
What could possibly go wrong?
No, I'm sure it'll be fine. And now what we'd like to do is talk about releasing a little love into KUSP's air. We are a publicly funded radio station. This is our spring membership campaign. And boy, are we looking for new members. We've just started a new format here. And what we are hoping is that people will adapt very quickly, like Boston Dynamic adapt quickly to the format and contribute to it. To help with that, we've got a speedy match.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Speedy match. This starts now. Oh, I see. And we have a limited amount of time to match this generous gift. Oh, and it's from Greg Becker and Joanne Bauer. And it's just till the end of the hour. It's $500 that will be contributed by first-time contributors. So that's you who are just tuning in and wanting to join us just between now and the end of the show. Your first-time gift in the next, 26 minutes or so will allow us to double the impact of this generous donation from Greg Becker and Joanne Bauer. So make it happen. Donate now at KUSP.org. Call us at 888-777-1507. Let's please take advantage of this brief opportunity to bring this membership campaign to a nice, successful conclusion. That's what we want to see.
And the new format you just mentioned can be summed up with Discover New Music,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
We've switched to Music Discover as our primary time. Of course, we're still keeping wonderful programs like Geek Speak and Dr. Dawn on and others that we have that are locally produced, rich content of mm-hmm. communication and discovery in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Music Discovery for a second because, as you know, Bonnie, I was raised here at the station. My father used to be here a lot, and so I'd come
he
in.
He was my old boss, in fact.
That's right.
Yeah.
Full beard and everything.
Full
batch,
beard and everything.
Right?
Yeah. I know. I'm having some way back machine here.
So when I'd come to the station, everything was about music. There was vinyl everywhere. I'd come and I'd listen to music as a preteen and a teenager, mm-hmm. I'd come in regularly mm-hmm. and listen to music. And at one point I thought, I want to do a radio show.
Yeah.
And so I created a tape of intro and outro to music.
Okay.
And then I submitted that. And the
we
music
call that
director,
a demo. A demo.
And we still receive those,
uh-huh.
right? Yes.
Uh-huh.
If you're passionate about music. And let me get on with that. So I take this tape and I give it to Johnny Simmons. Now, Johnny Simmons was at that time the music director here at KUSP. And he basically had to make sure all the music was good.
Yeah.
Right? And it was a lot of curatorial process.
He takes that serious.
He also produced the entire library, allows us to find music here. We're surrounded by music all over the place.
Yeah.
And so I submit that. And it's months before I finally pester him into talking to me.
Yeah.
And he sits down and he goes, "Hey, Lyle. Let me ask you how you feel about music." He's like, "What do you listen to?" I'm like, and I listen to a couple, bands.
Yeah.
"How much do you listen to music?" Like, I told him, I know when I can, I listen to it. I was like, he said, if you list the 10 most important things in your life, and for you, the thing that's, you know, one of the most important, would music be on that list? I'd be like, no. He's like, well, then you shouldn't be a music person at KUSB.
And well, I was like, he kind of walked you through that. That's nice.
And what he also said, you know, the fragile young ego of me, he says, but you know, if you're passionate about something, yeah, that's what you should be doing as a radio show. Uh-huh. We want people that really are engaged in that, right?
Yeah.
And so, of course, years later, when I started doing Geek Speak, obviously I found it, right? But the point here is that the reason I do Geek Speak and share it with people is, mm-hmm, because I spend a lot of time thinking about technology. I'm engaged in it. It's my field. It's my research. It's my passion. Mm-hmm. I pay attention in all different levels, and I love talking about it.
Yeah.
And then I weed out some of the cruft that might not be interested, and I think about the interesting stories of that. I curate, and then I come on the show and share with you. So my role is a curator, and I feel – in myself, it's hard to see, but when I hear the music programs now that are happening at KUSP, mm-hmm, I get that that's a curation is an art and,
yeah,
a talent.
Yeah.
And we have that here at KUSP.
In spades.
And I love it. So now I'm doing my commute over to Los Gatos. I'm listening to KUSP in the morning, uh-huh, and it's that time when I get to hear what's happening a bit in the Monterey Bay, uh-huh, but also just listen and discover new music because I love music, obviously.
Right.
I just don't spend all my life thinking about it like some people do. And I'm really glad they're here.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to be super passionate about music as a listener. You just have to be interested and curious. And we got you covered.
That's right. You can donate right now to keep that going. You're listening to us right now. You're listening throughout the week. Contribute. And we really do want those first time people to contribute. www.kusp.org, or speak to some people here in the studio with us, or right in the next room.
Yeah.
888-777-1507. It is a short phone call. It is a how much do you feel is comfortable for your budget to contribute to KUSP? You say that amount, we fill out a little quick form, and we're done. 888-777-1507. Do it right now, and Bonnie might even thank you.
Yeah, like I'm going to thank Craig. Hey, Craig from Aptos. Thank you. Craig says he really appreciates Dr. Don. She says he says that she does a wonderful job of simplifying and explaining complex information for us lay folks.
Indeed.
That's sort of helping with the whole people who are curious and want to discover things, just like Geek Speak does. We heard from someone in Santa Cruz just doing their part on the web, just, mm-hmm, taking care of business. Ken and Ben Lomond has re-upped his membership, and Bill in Santa Cruz has joined us for the first time. He says, it's good music. It's local people. We need our own radio station. Democracy starts at home. And I like,
beautiful,
that, because that gets into kind of my whole thing where, you know, to stand up for a public space where everyone can access the information and the music matters a lot to me. And, yeah, it's sort of a model of the kind of world I want to live in, that we all collaborate and make something great happen together.
Mm-hmm.
Please be a collaborator here at KUSP. It's listener support or bust at the station right now. So please go to KUSP.org. Have your contribution doubled by Greg Becker and Joanne Bauer. And also go to 888-777-1507. Maybe you want to let them know you want to be in that drawing for a Fitbit, but you don't have to let them know, because when you donate, you're automatically entered.
That's right. You can be an early adopter in our new endeavor. Act now by participating with your money. And is whatever works for you.
Yeah.
It goes all over the gambit, but really it's your decision. You just need to act now. 888-777-1507.
So you want to talk about mosquitoes?
I do. I actually want to talk about species, taking a species that's not normally in an environment.
A
non-native species. This has been a disaster as an idea on what to do,
yeah,
with things. When we put a new species in to solve a problem, mm-hmm, we just seem to pop up other ones, right?
Well, and there's some good thinking behind it in a way. Like if there's this thing called integrated pest management,
mm-hmm,
where if there's a natural predator for a particular pest – you create a kind environment for that predator to exist.
Put up an owl box on your property, right?
Like that.
Yeah,
like,
sure,
that. And if everybody kind of is familiar with the environment already, then you're just making an already existing system work better.
Yeah.
And some people take a little too far. A classic one, and there's a great documentary about this that was produced in the late 80s about the cane toad coming to Australia. It was introduced in the 30s. They thought, well, the cane toad has worked elsewhere to eat a particular kind of beetle. We've got a beetle in our cane fields. Let's bring in the cane toads. Of course, the beetle that was bothering Australia lived at the top of the plants. The cane toads are very heavy, squat things that don't really climb. They're not climbers.
So they didn't affect the beetle population at all?
No, but they sure did take over in Australia.
Oh, no.
Whoops.
They started eating something else, I'm assuming?
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was. Oh, yeah, like
other
small
reptiles
and things. Yeah, and we're kind of like edging them out.
And that's exactly why when I say that a new genetically modified mosquito in 30 days will be released in a small area in Florida.
What, will be?
You should go, what? Why?
Yeah.
What's okay.
Tell me.
So genetically engineered mosquitoes have been under regulatory review for the past like 5 years.
Yeah.
And the last stage of that review process just got approval by the Food and Drug Administration. They announced this yesterday.
Oh.
And this means that the Oxitex OX513A Aedes aegypti mosquito will pose no significant threat to the environment or to the people of Key Haven, a community in Florida Keys.
According to whom?
According to this 5-year study.
Okay. So well, they've looked at it.
They looked at it. So now we're in a 30-day review process where the citizens of Key Haven can go, what?
Well, yeah, excuse me.
Now, and I think that the basic idea of like...
What's this mosquito for?
Okay, so here's the thing about this mosquito. There's a couple things that can remove the stress about this.
Okay.
It's a genetically engineered mosquito. They will only release males.
Okay. Okay, so they won't be breeding amongst themselves.
They will be breeding, but males do not bite at all.
Okay.
The females are the one that suck blood, and then they use the energy of the blood to lay their eggs and feed their larvae.
Okay, so everyone gets to keep their whole skull cap.
So, yeah, the genetically engineered mosquito will not inject you and won't go into you.
Okay.
The other aspect of it is the genetically engineered mosquito, to all of its offspring, will kill them. So they will have children, they will live in ponds, and they will never mature. They will die.
Okay.
So if this male mates with a female that's already sucked your blood and has lots of energy to lay eggs and have larvae, all those larvae babies will die.
Okay,
so it seems
Well, that
good.
Sounds great for people if they're concerned about disease. And what about the live living critters of Florida that eat mosquitoes and rely on them for food?
So, the dominant effect of the mosquito being gone, we decided as a population that we're cool with getting rid of mosquitoes that pass pathogens.
Right.
Like, the idea of getting rid of malaria is actually getting rid of mosquitoes. Like, that's how we're getting rid of malaria.
Right, yeah.
So the area in Key Haven, the Florida Keys does not actually have malaria. They have a few other diseases that are nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And the people there definitely want to get rid of mosquitoes.
So okay.
The idea
the
of killing the species,
have made their
that's
vote.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
thanks, people. But what about the critters?
Yeah. I mean, the question is really whether, well, the critters, they might not want to go. I mean, the species doesn't want to go. It's one of those things I've always thought about. Like, as a child, I kind of, you know, flippantly was like, it's okay to get rid of all mosquitoes. All poison oak can be killed. And all mosquitoes can be killed.
This was an early decision.
It was an early decision of mine.
Yeah.
I've grown to appreciate the importance of poison oak, actually.
Really? What's your turnaround on that one?
Well, poison oak is an amazing
just
plant.
Goat food or what?
Well, no, yeah, exactly. Because goats. No, I mean, poison oak has obviously an important impact in our area.
Oh.
It's a native species. It's important, all of those things. And I thinking removing a large species like that would probably have side effects that would not be good.
Yeah.
It also is an impressive plant in general. It can grow into a tree, a bush, a vine.
Ta-da.
It can spread out. I mean, it's neat.
It wants to live.
Yeah, it totally wants to live. Yeah. And so I think now I've returned myself on getting rid of poison oak completely. I'll get rid of it at my property.
Yeah.
Mosquitoes, I'm okay with getting rid of. I'm okay if we only have species of mosquitoes that are like in captivity.
Okay.
We want to do that.
Yeah.
But what do you feel? Do you think it's okay to destroy species?
I guess as long as the animals that eat mosquitoes have plenty of other bugs to eat, maybe it's not a problem. But it's, you know, for me, it's a question. Like, of course we all hate it, but we don't make up the whole ecosystem here. And so what are the costs? And we don't really know. I guess we're about to find out in Florida.
This is actually probably going to go into battle, right? There'll be some court cases on this because the people there that don't want to be guinea pigs in a test don't want to be guinea pigs in a test. This is not unprecedented, though. The to fight disease, the federal government, FDA, does have some authorities to do that. And so the federal disease control system can do things that are outside the desire of the people to protect us. We mandate, for example, vaccinations. Some people don't want vaccinations. I don't know if there's actually criminal charges for it, but we do, highly.
We might be working up to that point.
We might be. there are side effects to not doing kind of, the scientifically expected thing. At the same time, our culture is opposed to the idea of being controlled and told what to do. And if I lived in that area and I knew that mosquitoes were going to be released that have been genetically engineered.
I definitely want to know more.
It sounds scary. It reminds me of killer tomatoes, right? Like, there's a fear there. To me, it looks like it would be great if people didn't have the fear, if they understood the science behind it and kind of understood what this could mean.
Yeah, if they're making an informed decision about what seems like the right thing to do rather than a fear-based knee-jerk suspicion about what might be true.
There are field trials of this OX513A male genetically engineered species in Brazil and the Cayman Islands and Panama and Malaysia.
Okay.
So people, places where malaria is a serious problem and people die all the time. Risk is, you know, people are less risk averse.
It's relevant
for that kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely. And the same kind of thing happens in the Florida Keys. There are diseases there that we want to get rid of.
Well, I like people. I want them to live. Yeah, hopefully it'll all work out.
All right.
Hey, you know, something that I've really been missing out on since I left GeekSpeak is just what you guys think of the whole Apple versus the FBI story.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that. And I don't want to bore people with because it was so rich and there's so much discussion about it.
Well, you may have covered a bit
We have
already.
Covered it really well. But yesterday, Obama made a discussion about it.
He said something?
Yeah, he went to South by Southwest, which is a music technology show in Texas.
He went to South by Southwest.
And he spoke, and there's a long
Ladies
video I haven't watched
our
yet.
Our hippest president ever.
And his basic idea was, hey, let's not freak out on this. Let's cooperate. Some of his general theory. So the general thing between FBI and Apple. FBI says, hey, we've got a phone. A criminal was using this phone. That criminal's dead. They didn't ever own this phone. There's no privacy because the person that owned it, or the person was using it, is dead. It's owned by a local government because the guy worked for the government. So.
Okay.
Apple, please write some software that will unencrypt this. And here's a 1780 law that gives us the precedence to do that.
Yeah.
Apple says if we make the software that can decrypt this phone, then we're basically showing to the precedence that we can do this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we'll have to participate in this process of peeking into people's privacy at court order. But more importantly than that, if you ask us to do this and we achieve this, we are breaking the model of privacy such that anyone could potentially do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the general argument between the FBI and Apple.
Okay, so Apple says, we get it that you mean it for this one specific incident, but trust us, we know something that will spread like wildfire and there will be no security. And the government's saying, but we want to solve a case though.
And so President Obama is saying, hey, Apple, let's not be rigid on this. We're talking about one device. We're not talking about a lot. And he's basically citing the FBI's perspective on it. But his perspective is there's a flaw in his reasoning. And the flaw is this. He is saying, look, we just want to be very careful with the back door that we produce. We want to make sure that that's done in a very smart way. Silicon Valley people are very smart. Let's have a discussion. Let's develop this such that it is safe to do this backdoor access to privacy.
He's saying, so figure out the problem then.
And the quote he has is, look, the government doesn't go into your panties and your panty drawers and look in your panty drawers, right? Unless a court says, hey, go look at their house. They're probably a bad person. That's a court order.
Did he really say panty drawer?
He does. Something like that. So this is, I'm paraphrasing from quotes I've seen.
Okay.
So we do sometimes decide that the safety of our community requires sometimes to look into people's privates, right? Like that's something we do with court orders. So Apple saying no is like, well, yes, we should say no sometimes, but sometimes we should say yes, and let's not be dogmatic on it.
Oh, so
but
what do you
there's
think?
A flaw.
Yeah,
there's a serious
flaw.
What
are you talking about?
Okay. It used to be that your personal information was in your house, and it was in a drawer.
Yeah.
Okay. And your house was locked. But more importantly than that, there was a social norm about your house being a private space. I live in a private space with a community, and you live in a private space where there's a community around you.
Mm-hmm.
And we all respect that so that we feel safe as well. It's part of being a society, a small local society. If you're in a community where things get broken into, you put more and more security around it, it starts to become not a great place to live. That's why we say it's bad neighborhoods, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the general idea of using that metaphor breaks down because the internet's not like that. It's not like
it's assumed to be a public space.
That's the thing, is that the system itself is public. You can get to access to everything on the internet. And the only way to make it private is to put up encryption. Okay?
Okay.
So the encryption has to be that boundary. We don't have a social norm. And the reason we don't have a social norm on the internet is that there isn't the same kind of personal qualities. You know, earlier we empathized with a robot being pushed over.
Yeah.
That's because we're humans, right? There are psychopaths out there that don't have the same feelings that humans do about space and privacy and that kind of thing.
Or each other. Or,
yeah.
Yeah, their own.
And if a psychopath lives in your neighborhood, they're going to go through your drawers potentially, right? There's nothing to stop them socially about that.
Yeah.
But they're not a majority of the population. They're a minority. And so a community can kind of protect itself because if it happens – in law enforcement investigates, then you remove that person from society. That's the idea of prisons. Okay. I'm generally overstating some simplicities there. But the point is, on the internet, that psychopath can operate anywhere globally, and they're relatively easy to hide themselves. But more than that, they can actually write an application that will do the same thing. Not them themselves, but will automatically do this.
Okay, so you're saying that without the social norms or practical blocks in place, someone who is a minority person, a mm-hmm. psychopath, can have a
planetary effect.
Planetary effect.
Yes.
Wow.
So,
okay.
And, right. and that's the difference. It's kind of akin to saying, a criminal has the ability to make an infinite amount of little robots that go into your panty drawers.
Yeah.
Right. If we had that happen, it was free to make these things, mm-hmm. and they happen all the time. You bet we'd be making better security around people's homes. The home itself would have steel doors around it so these little things couldn't get in, mm-hmm. right? You'd live in an apocalypse where you had to fight these robots, right? That's what the internet's like. And as strange as that, and I'm not trying to be scaremongering. I'm just trying to talk about the difference between our normal experience and an internet experience. Hmm. And so that's why making a back door fails, because it is all – there's no social norms. It's automated the attacks, and any kind of weakness will be spread instantly to – many, many different systems that will do the same thing.
Okay, so but what about – I mean, I like where Obama comes from when he says, can't we work something out? Let's collaborate on a solution instead of arguing that the problem is or isn't there. Let's just work on a solution. What about that?
Well, the problem is that the solution would be to implement some kind of system that would allow for another party to get in. And when you do that –
so no matter what solution it is, it's dangerous.
Well, there's twofold. One is implementing that system could potentially have a security vulnerability. There's mm-hmm. a database somewhere that can access to your phone. Your court has to do it. But that system could be complicated. We could probably do that. Uh-huh. But there's another aspect of this too, and that is that doesn't actually alleviate the problem, because computing devices can do lots of things. And just because Apple doesn't put it in there and have a security vault that has a back door doesn't mean I could actually run something on top of my phone that could do that. It's actually a relatively trivial system to make it perfectly bulletproof. So someone can do it on top. So you're not going to catch everybody. Uh-huh. You're going to mandate a weakness that affects everybody's privacy. And that's kind of the problem. You don't really solve the situation by forcing the back doors.
Okay. Huh.
So there's my little geeky summary on it.
All right. Well, thanks. Yeah, come on off the soapbox here. Now we got a pitch to our public radio listeners
yes.
about supporting this show and this station and this whole idea of a public place on the yeah. radio dial where we can share these kinds of ideas and listen to some great music. It all happens here at KUSP. You can be a part of it, you who are listening now, and we hope that you do. We're doing a drawing for a Fitbit Blaze. Anyone who donates to the station right now automatically gets entered into that. Of course, you don't have to donate to win. There's rules up at KUSP.org, which, by the way, is a fine place to make your donation to the station. You can also call us at 888-777-1507, and we hope you do. It's listener support or bust right now at KUSP. We've just switched formats to a largely music format. Mm-hmm. We're really kind of playing on the idea that we're all curious people as public radio listeners.
New music. New ideas.
Yeah, discovering things.
Yeah.
That's what we're up to now.
Real experts taking time to look at the mass amount of our cultural experience, mm-hmm. pulling out the nuggets of golden nuggets and passing them on to you. That's the curatorial process.
Yeah.
And the people that you hear all the time are dedicated to doing that. Mm-hmm. We just need to make sure we can keep doing that. And, you know, specifically the difference between a commercial and a nonprofit public radio station is really one thing. And that is that our audience is our customer, if you will.
Yeah.
You are a customer. In a commercial business, the advertisers are the customers.
Yeah, which is not what we think.
The product.
We still think we're the customers of a commercial radio station, but that's not it.
No. The reason that what the commercial stations do is they sell ads to advertisers, and the commodity is the listenership.
Right.
We don't do it that way. We flip it. We say, you're the customer. We want to do what's perfect and great for you,
yeah.
and you'll just appreciate that. Step up and donate. So you become the owner of the content that's curated for you. It's a beautiful model. And it actually has, as you said earlier, spread throughout the podcasting environment because
yeah.
it is a pretty slick way to do things.
It works, man. It works. It's worked here for 45 years, and we're looking forward to you demonstrating that it works here and now as well. Please go to KUSP.org. Make a donation in an amount that's comfortable for you. Just a pro tip. Boy, if you can do small monthly payments,
oh, yeah.
as little as $10 a month, that really helps us out here.
And you don't notice it as much.
I do it at $20 a month.
Yep.
I don't notice it. You can also give at 888-777-1507. That's our phone number. There's folks in the next room just waiting to talk shop with you. We all love public radio here and KUSP specifically, and we hope that you will join us.
Yeah. You know, you can... You, The Fitbit, of course, we're also throwing your name in a drawing for a Fitbit, which will help you exercise and all that. Mm-hmm. And there's a matching grant as well right now.
Yeah, there was. It's not clear to me that it's still on, but Greg Becker and Joanne Bauer offered a gift of $500 to encourage contributions this hour. You can call at the 888-777-1507 number and ask if that's still on. That's a way to mean that no matter what you give, it becomes twice as much to the station, which is nice. And the important part of that is that you're stepping up and participating in some way. It doesn't matter how much you give. What matters is that you're participating with us. And,
and every week I focus some time and energy on getting prepared for Geek Speak. I pulled together geeks to join me. This week I asked Bonnie to join to help talk to you. And basically that role, that spending time, there's always a little bit of barrier to acting. Right?
Yeah.
And then when it's time to be on air or to record the segment, there's a little barrier, right? I got to get my coffee, got to kind of get myself motivated.
There's a little like you.
Yeah. And I know that barrier to acting. I mean, I get it. I do it every week. And every week, I consistently am surprised by how good it feels to participate. Now, I participate by volunteering my time to curate the world of technology. And Dr. Don does the world of medicine. And the Seventh Avenue Prejudice does physics and science and just a general wonderfulness.
The big ideas.
The
yeah.
Agony Column is reading books and talking to you about the ones that are fantastic and interviewing the authors. And of course, day after day, hour after hour, we have people thinking about music and invested in different disciplines of music.
Right. We're about to hear from Cindy Odom. She's putting a great Celtic show for you
right
now.
That's right.
Right
now, Cindy's behind Bonnie on a ladder looking through the music. And I'm assuming that she's doing, and she's dancing now, right on.
Yeah.
So her passion about the music means that you can listen and enjoy a full hour of curated Celtic music that means something, that's involved and thought through. It's not just a standard stream. There's a human being that has hours and hours, years and years of experience, and they're curating. That curation is what we're offering to you. And all you have to do is do the little act of stepping up and calling.
And here's the number, 888-777-1507. Go to KUSP.org. Our producer tells us that the next two people who contact us will have their contribution matched by Greg Becker and Joanne Bauer. That's fantastic. This speedy match is going to end at the top of the hour.
That's right.
3 minutes. So get on that now. You'd be one of the two people that are still eligible to take advantage of that speedy match.
888-777-1507. That's 888-777-1507.
Special thanks to Bill in BC. Oh my gosh. He says, I especially want to thank Bonnie for the gift she's offering. You mean taking the helm?
Yeah.
I'm glad to do it, man. Marilyn in Santa Cruz, thank you for your new contribution to KUSP. Love to have you aboard. We'd love to thank you next, but that depends entirely on you. If you'd like to communicate with the show, GeekSpeak, one way you can reach GeekSpeak is via Twitter or Facebook. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. We walk the talk, too. Just cite your sources, won't you? This is Independent Public Radio, 88.9 KUSP Santa Cruz, streaming live worldwide at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of GeekSpeak, please visit GeekSpeak.org. You can email us at geeks@geekspeak.org. Contact us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at KUSP Geeks. Thank you to Michael Newman for Pet Star Music for our theme song. Thanks to Greg and to Chandler and to Alex, and thank you especially. Lyle, it was so fun to be here with you today.
It was a pleasure to be here at the episode 10 of our 16th season. Thanks, Bonnie.
All right, stay tuned for the Continental Drift.